at the same time to just go out and play a game, not really worry about anything.
The sounds of John Lester, which means the sounds of Major League Baseball, and particularly on the north side of Chicago, are right around the corner. As we welcome you to our little spring training special here, Andy Mazur in our studios here in downtown Chicago, and Kevin Powell joining us via satellite, I guess you'd say, from Mesa, Arizona, where the Cubs have gone through some pitchers and catchers workouts. Kevin, they're getting ready for their first full squad workout tomorrow, right?
Already right back at it, Andy. Doesn't it seem like yesterday you, me, Carm, Hulk, were all chatting after the World Series victory and that incredible playoff run?
Yeah.
I mean, it just flew by.
It's weird because I came down to the studio, and I've been in the studio a few times before since the clincher. But, you know, we're talking baseball, and I get this sheet, and I'm looking at all these cuts that we have to play here tonight about some of these guys that we haven't heard from in a while, but it's certainly good to hear from them again.
It is, and that was a little cut that we heard from John Lester, who talked this morning today. And, you know, he mentioned the youth of this, and I think there is sort of, he called it kind of a naive cockiness that this team has, that everybody's got a little extra pep in their step, and there's a little swagger, and I think rightfully so. I think it's the right sort of cockiness, and, you know, Joe Maddon talked about it as well. I mean, it's about building a winning culture, and people are naturally going to some people love to hate the winners, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like the Yankees, people are going to hate on them. Joe Maddon alluded to the Dodgers in the 80s, how
yeah.
they just had a certain swagger.
Yankees, and Red Sox.
Right, and the Patriots now. So Joe Maddon, we can play a cut here. He talks about the team over the past couple of years and during this entire rebuild, they've sort of learned how to win.
I think what that means is that knowing how to win is that when you show up every day, back to the process, going through the process properly, if we do these things well and we keep our wits about us, keep our head about us, here comes the latter part of the game. We should show up and be able to turn it in our favor somehow, as opposed to the game going the other direction.
Well, when I hear that cut, don't you just immediately go back to Game 7?
Mm-hmm. I go to Game 7. I go to Game 6. I go to Game 5.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there is a certain value to that and a certain confidence. And you know, you talked about swagger that you kind of have to have when you go into a game, whether you're up or you're down, and you know that you have the ability to come back and win, or you have the ability just to go in there and know you're going to shut things down and come out of there with the song playing and the flag flying.
Yeah, and especially I think it's to Maddon's point, learning how to bounce back from disaster. And Game 7 was a disaster. Mm-hmm. In the eighth inning when Aroldis Chapman gave up a three-run homer, it felt like the world was collapsing on the Cubs once again. And this team, compared to other Cubs teams in the past who weren't able to bounce back from horrible bounces, unlucky breaks, things like that, they were fine. They calmed themselves down. They met in the locker room during a 15-minute rain delay or a workout room, got their stuff together, and they were just fine, and they kept their calm, they kept their cool, and they've learned how to win. Maddon, and back to the point of people loving to hate, here's Maddon's thoughts on people loving to hate the winners in sports.
I don't know if the words hate it. I think it's somewhat natural that if a team is very successful, it works both ways. You're going to get the group that absolutely jumps on the bandwagon, too. I think there's the part of the world that wants to be attached to a winner. I think it picks up your day a little bit.
So here we are, the 2017 Cubs, and it's a whole new era, Andy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you covered the Cubs for how many years?
For about 10, yeah.
For about 10 years, a decade. This wasn't exactly the attitude they had heading into each spring training, was it?
No, it was different. And, you know, every once in a while, you know, they'd bring in some talent. They'd bring in a high-priced free agent. They would bring in somebody through a trade that got you excited. And I think every Cub fan, every baseball fan really has a reason to be excited every time the calendar flips the middle of February and into March because, as the old saying goes, hope springs eternal. Every team is nothing and nothing. All your teams are in first place. But I think you're right. I think that there's a different kind. I even thought there was a different kind of feel going into spring training last year based on the fact that you even got swept in the NLCS a year ago by the Mets because they were on the precipice. They were building towards something, and the right guy was at the helm. I didn't really think that way in Game 7 or Game 6 of last year, but we're past that. I'm beyond it. He's past it. We're all past it. But you know, you get the impression that and the one that really impressed me the most is Rizzo because he was around for 100 lost seasons. And now he's around for 100 win seasons and world championships. So it's pretty cool to be able to see him and to see guys like Chris Bryant, who we'll hear from a little bit later, get to kind of think that this is how things always go because he, let's see, won Rookie of the Year, MVP, World Series, and 2 years in baseball. Not too bad.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And with Rizzo, you know, he talked about the approach to spring training, and he says it's the same every year. He says it feels that cause after just a couple days here, I'm like, this really feels just like last season because this is a team that's not satisfied with one World Series. Mm-hmm. I think everyone can sort of understand that that's not the vibe this team is giving off. That's not the mission. It's something bigger, and none of them are shying away from dynasty or repeat talk. I mean, from day one, Kyle Schwarber said, we're hungrier now. Chris Bryant, like you said, we'll hear from him later, but he mentioned it's World Series or bust for the mm-hmm. Chicago Cubs. It's no more drought or this or that. It's something bigger, and I think it starts from the top with Theo Epstein and with Joe Maddon, who talks about the winning culture they're trying to embed into the organization.
It's not that you feel as though you're just going to show up and throw your gloves out there, you're going to win. That's not the point. You gain this confidence based on winning. And the fact that you, there's something to be said for knowing how to win.
Amen.
He's exactly right.
Yeah,
he's exactly right. And I think everyone's on the same page here as well. I mean, Joe Maddon, Theo Epstein, and Jed Hoyer all met with the media at the same time, and all of their messages are on point. You know, it's not one guy for himself. I know that's cliche. Mm-hmm. It's all for one, and you get that feeling with this team completely. So I think it's just a culture thing, and it's a complete revamping of the Chicago Cubs where they're no longer the lovable losers. This is a team that – and I think the one thing that's a huge advantage was going into last year, you know, just a year ago in spring training, the slogan was embrace the target, mm-hmm. right? Well, that hasn't changed at all. I mean, the target's bigger now, of
Much
course,
bigger.
But I think the team knows the same – has the same mentality that it is embrace the target because last year they and a lot of people were giving them some grief for this that well you guys haven't won anything or this or that but I think that was Joe Maddon's way of putting that mindset in his players that look you guys are good understand that the rest of the league has taken notice about how talented this roster is and now you come back here and John Lester talked about it, Jake Arrieta. They said, look, we understand the target's even bigger now. So I think that works to their advantage going through basically a similar thing as they did a year ago.
Yeah, and obviously last year they were coming off of the sweep, the disappointment at the hands of the Mets. They kind of got to see another team celebrate what they wanted to celebrate, and I think that sticks with the ball club, especially as young as they were on the core positions. And that's the crazy thing about this year. The core basically stayed the same. The only major loss, and it is a major loss, which I want to get to with you here in just a minute. We're going to take a quick time out here in a sec. But, you know, Dexter Fowler is the big loss as far as the position players are concerned because no more you go, we go. He go bye-bye to the St. Louis Cardinals for a big dollars. Can't blame him for doing that. So I want to get into some of the questions. I mean, believe it or not, yeah. There are some questions surrounding this team as they come in. Maybe not who's going to make this roster, but maybe about plans for platoons and leadoff hitters and things of that nature, which I want to get into coming up here in just a moment. Kevin Powell is live in Arizona. I'm Andy Mazur. We're here in our downtown studios, the Showcase Studio.
Older man in the gym tell me, he's a big Red Sox Patriots fan. He goes, yeah, congrats, you guys won one, but you haven't done anything until the whole country hates you. And it's in a way it's true because you're growing up a diehard Dolphin fan. I hated Tom Brady because he was the best. And now it's like I'm almost a Patriots fan because he's so good.
Anthony Rizzo telling it like it is, being accosted at the gym of all places, and a gentleman telling him that, yeah, you're not hated yet. There's still kind of that little friendly, fuzzy stigma around the Cubs, although it's getting a little harder with the fact that they did win the World Series last year and are coming into spring training as the possible favorites once again. But it's a new kind of a feeling for these guys.
It is, and again, I think the whole embrace the target thing is working towards their advantage. I mean, but you look what the Patriots have done, and the culture they have, and that starts from the top with Bill Belichick. It's sort of mirroring what kind of similar way as what the Cubs are trying to do with the theme throughout the season. It's sort of the same exact thing, and they have the leaders in the right place. You have Joe Maddon, who it's a trickle-down effect from him from day one, and they all buy into it, and Rizzo talked about it this week that Maddon doesn't get enough credit. They love the guy. They love everything he does, from his goofy antics to some of the gimmicky stuff he does in spring training. They all buy into it.
Which is important, and you have to. That's how things the message gets delivered from the top to the bottom, as we were talking about a bit earlier. He's Kevin Powell. He's out in Arizona covering the Cubs and Mesa. I'm Andy Mazur here in our studios in Chicago, the Allstate Showcase studio right here on Michigan Avenue. And we're talking a little Cubs baseball here as the first official Cubs team workout begins tomorrow. And Kevin, we talked before the break about, believe it or not, there still are a few question marks surrounding mm-hmm. this team. They're the kind of question marks you like to have around your team because mm-hmm. you pretty much know the 25-man roster. I don't think they're going to be too many surprises, save an injury in spring training, God forbid, that something happens. I think the 25-man is probably pretty set. But replacing Dexter Fowler is an interesting decision on two levels. And I'm curious if anybody's really addressed that situation early in camp. I know a lot of position players are there early. But not only replacing his defense, he was above average in center field last year, mm-hmm. but you talk about a 390 on base average and leading off games in style the way he did. What's the thought process?
Well, there's certainly, when asked about it, everyone, of course, understands the presence he had, how important he was to the offense of the team last year. I think the bright side of looking at it is that you have a healthy Kyle Schwarber now. You have a chance to give Albert Almora more playing time in center field. And I think ideally, obviously, what they want is for Almora to be the long-term option in center field. I mean, I think he's a guy who, by the way, has been mashing the ball in batting practice the past few days. He's been fun to watch, put five or six over the fence today. I think if they can get 15 homers out of him, 60 RBIs, something like that, play a strong defense, he's good in center field. I think they really want to see him make a stride, big strides this year. The Cubs have talked about it. They still look out more, has had some really good spring camps, mm-hmm. and it hasn't really translated into the regular season. Not that he's been bad or anything, but I think they want to see a full season of Almora. They bring in John Jay basically as an insurance blanket in case Almora can't step up and fulfill the shoes of Dexter Fowler. So I think that's probably one of the biggest question marks. I think one of the other question marks for me, and it's actually a sort of a good problem to have because the Cubs do have some good problems to have. They have so many positional players and so many talented players and not enough spots to go mm-hmm. around. So it's, what do you do with Kyle Schwarber? Now, they've talked about him catching. He did his first work behind home plate today in some bullpen sessions. I'm thinking he'll maybe start 10 to 15 games behind home plate this year, but they really want to ease him into that, and they want to see him primarily in left field. And that opens another question, which is, what do you do with Ben Zobrist then? Because Javi Baez, you're probably going to want in the field as often as possible. So to me, that's sort of a good problem to mm-hmm. have. I don't know what your thoughts on that. To me, I think Kyle Schwarber has to be in the lineup every single day. His bat is just too good. And you mentioned Fowler. There's already talk of Schwarber leading off sometimes if the pitching matchup is right.
Let's take that subject first, and then I'll kind of give you an idea of what I think about the versatility and Javi Baez. But, you know, there's the two big names that have come up as far as the potential leadoff hitters, and you can kind of throw away the notion of the prototypical leadoff man. They're just few and far between. It's about a guy that can get on base. It's right. about a guy that can score.
And Schwarber can scoot a little bit better than people give him credit for.
Yeah, I agree. I just worry about losing his bat later in the lineup. I love him in the two-hole. I thought that the two-hole was perfect for him during the playoffs. And I like Zobrist a little better at the top spot just because he's a switch hitter. And you don't have to wreck your lineup if you're facing a tough lefty on that day. And I think that he gives you, he gives you a good veteran at bat every time he comes to the plate.
It's a tough out.
He's a very tough out. He's tough to strike out usually. I mean, he went through that streak in May last year where you couldn't get him out. Mm-hmm. And obviously things evened out on the wash toward the end. But obviously you could argue the biggest hit in Cubs history ever. In game seven.
No question.
So I kind of think in that respect, I'd rather see Zobrist one and Schwarber two, followed by Bryant and Rizzo. But that's just me kind of thinking out loud here.
I think we will see that. I think it all depends on the pitching matchup for the day. Unfortunately, you have Joe Maddon making these decisions, who knows more about baseball than both of us combined will ever know. So I think the right man is going to be calling the shots in that regard. I think what we'll probably see, because Joe Maddon does like to tinker around, and he's talked about that. He says he'll have his morning coffee and grab a napkin and start jotting down lineups for the day. So he likes to tinker with it. I think it depends on the pitching matchup. We know what Schwarber can do against righty pitchers. So I think it'll be a rotation of Schwarber, a little Zobrist at leadoff. If Zobrist is getting the start, maybe Baez is off that day. Cause I'm really interested to see how much they're going to be rotating Zobrist and Baez. Baez, you want him to keep developing, but Zobrist, again, such a tough bat. I could see them letting up a bit on Zobrist playing time. He's the oldest player on the team, I believe, positional player. He's 35. So I could see them maybe dialing him down a bit, but he's so valuable. But I do think that it could be any sort of combination. I think you could see Schwarber batting second, Zobrist first, Bryant third, Rizzo fourth. I could also see Schwarber first, Bryant second, Rizzo third. And I love that lineup because for an opposing pitcher, I don't care who it is, that is overwhelming. Your first opponent is Kyle Schwarber followed by Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo. That's gonna wear down any pitcher in Major League Baseball to start a game to have to face those three guys. So I love the overwhelming factor that brings, and we saw that a little bit last year. So I think it'll be a rotation of a few guys at the top, and we'll see. Almora is a guy that could potentially be a leadoff. I don't know if he'll be there this year. Plate discipline isn't exactly where Joe Maddon wants his leadoff batter to be. So I think it'll be sort of a rotation depending on pitching matchups.
And the other rotation to kind of look at, you mentioned Schwarber being in the lineup every day. Mm-hmm. You know me from last year, and I've harped on this since I've been able to speak about him. Javi Baez needs to be in the lineup every day as well, whether it be at shortstop, at second base, at third base. The kid can play the outfield, too. I don't know if they'd want to tinker around with that too much. That might be an option later in the season if, John Jay doesn't work out or if Almora's not working out. But these, again, are really excellent problems to have.
Yeah, and one other question mark is Jason Hayward.
I was going to bring that up. I think that, you talk about the top of that lineup. It's really nothing, though, without the middle part of it and toward the bottom of it, because we saw last year the top went into a little bit of a funk, during the playoffs, with the Rizzo and with Addison Russell. Mm-hmm. It's so important for guys like Wilson Contreras, who looks like he's going to be the everyday catcher.
As he should be.
And I believe he should be as well. And then you get to the Hayward situation, and I know this guy had every reason in the world to hang his head and not talk to the media last year. He gutted it out. I gained a ton of respect for him, and I know he worked his rear end off in the offseason.
Yeah, and just talking to him throughout the year, like you just said, he signed a contract like that, and you come in and you can't even really hit the ball out of the infield. It was sad to a point last year. Saw him in batting practice today. I'm sure many of you have seen some social media stuff of him kind of working on his swing. His hands are a little lower, looks a little more compact, but it's still kind of a long, awkward swing. But he was making great contact in BP. Granted, it is BP, 65-mile-per-hour batting practice, balls down the middle. But the swing looked better than last year, and I know he's put a lot of work into it. He doesn't want to follow up what he did last year at the plate. Defensively, running the bases, we all know how great he is there. But, man, if they can get some production out of him from the plate, and you look at some of his career numbers, if he gets anywhere back to close to that, that's like adding a free agent.
We're extremely confident heading into it. I guess some of the pressure's off. 108 years is now behind us, but the goal from here on out is to win a World Series.
Chris Bryant of the Cubs kind of laying it out right there on the line.
There it is.
World Series or bust. Andy Mazur here in our downtown studios, the Allstate Showcase studio, and Kevin Powell out in Mesa, Arizona covering the Cubs. I got to tell you, Kev, the Michigan Avenue is just jumping tonight. You're missing out on some good talent out here tonight.
Hey, snap a photo or something for me, Andy. Yeah, I think the weather is just about the same in Chicago as it is out here. We've got some nasty rain in the forecast for tomorrow, which could screw up plans for full-day workouts for both Sox and Cubs tomorrow.
Okay.
Both had scheduled to do that, but there's rain and the forecast all day out here in the desert tomorrow. So we'll see how that affects their plans.
Yeah, and that's the reason that all those teams moved out to Arizona, because they were so sick of rainouts in the Cactus and the Grapefruit League. They all built facilities in Arizona, and I think it's like the last 3 or 4 years there's been a couple of rainstorms that have gone through and disrupted some spring training.
Yeah, I was talking to some members of the Cubs, and they were just sort of rolling their eyes like, yep, this happens once in a while. Yeah. But I think they may end up having sort of an abbreviated type thing indoors in some of their facilities. The Cubs' new Under Armour Performance Center, they call it, is unbelievable. They have, like, the best spring training complex you could think of. It's got all the fields. It's got brand-new workouts. So they've got a good spot if they do have to go inside.
Kevin Powell's in Arizona. I'm Andy Mazur here in Chicago talking a little Cubs baseball, spring training 2017. And Kev, just before the news, you were talking a little bit about the one guy to kind of keep an eye on, and that's Jason Hayward. And yeah, much has been made about the fact that he just didn't hit the ball last year, and that's, you can't hide it. He didn't hide from it. Did a lot of offseason work. But the one thing I want to caution fans about, and I've talked to many hitting coaches in my association with baseball, spring training is such an unfair assessment of what a hitter is going to do during the regular season for several reasons. I mean, the facility has gotten so much better, but, you know, the air there is so much different. Mm-hmm. The field are hard. Base hits, you don't have official scorers, so averages kind of get inflated every once in a while.
Right.
And, you know, you're working against pitchers that are only throwing to you one time rather than two times, three times. They're not stretching themselves out. The thing that hitting coaches look for and to find out if a guy is really locked in, a left-handed hitter hitting the ball with authority to left field, guys laying off bad breaking balls, guys swinging with an idea of the strike zone, and also making good, solid contact, even in the outs. Because a lot of times, you know, you don't get into full game planning and scouting reports before a spring training game like you would before a regular season game. So don't get too excited or too low if Jason Hayward busts out and hits 450 this spring, or if Jason Hayward hits a buck and a half.
It's
confidence.
It's confidence, and it's a long process. I mean, he's going to have success during regular season games. And I was mentioning Almora earlier and about how he was crushing the ball today, but you're exactly right, Andy. I mean, it's BP. Almora's looked good in spring in the past, and he hasn't replicated what he's done in the spring into the regular season. And it goes vice versa both ways. So I think that's a great point by you. I was just mentioning the fact, because I know so many people were interested in Hayward's swing. So I was
absolutely
some BP today, and the swing just looks a little more compact, and he looked like he was driving the ball. But yes, it is batting practice for sure, and it's just spring training right now. But yeah. I think with Hayward, it's a long process, and he's going to have to, ideally for him, find the success early on.
You know, Cub fans will remember the name Gary Scott, and that's a third base prospect from the early 1990s. Who tore the cover off the ball in Mesa and came up with the Cubs and made the trip north, and the temperature dropped about 65 degrees from what it was in Arizona to opening day, and he didn't make it. And that's, you know, I hate to single one guy out, but you know, that's why you can't get too wrapped up in stats, home runs, even you know, pitchers with bad numbers in spring training. You can't get hit because you don't know what their objective was that day.
Well, I remember just to a year ago where Jake Arrieta pitched three innings or so in a spring training game, and he comes and he's talking to us after, and he cruised through the first two innings. In the third inning, it looked like he had lost his command. He walks a couple guys, so we're talking to him after, and I think somebody just asked him, well, what happened? He goes, oh, nothing happened. I was trying to walk guys because I wanted to work on my pickoff. So
what's the truth?
It's the truth. I mean, guys, especially pitchers, too, because guys are testing things out. Some pitchers will come out of a spring training game after they gave up 4 or 5 runs, and they say, no, I felt great. I was just working on something here and there, and it was totally fine for them. I think for a lot of the pitchers, it's just sort of a command thing and sort of getting yourself, your stamina right, I think, for most of those guys, because they're really going to be perfecting their junk and their breaking ball stuff in bullpen sessions. So for them, it's just normalizing themselves back to that in-game environment. And working on things. So you're right. You don't look into it too much, what you see here in spring, especially when some of these numbers are going to be inflated in certain ways.
All right, we're talking pitching because there were some other changes on this Cubs roster going forward here into 2017. And most notably, the closer, Aroldis Chapman, back with the Yankees after signing a free agent deal. And I thought the Cubs made a tremendous deal. I know Jorge Soler may blossom into the greatest thing since sliced bread. I just didn't like his attitude last year. I wasn't around him a lot to figure out if it was an attitude situation or if that's just the way Jorge is. He's just not, full of a lot of emotion or whatever.
Yeah, I think he's got kind of the chill, relaxed type
that's fine.
To him.
That's fine. I don't mean to beat him down here, but
yeah, and I think the fact of the matter, too, is where are you going to play him?
Yeah, there's just no room. There's absolutely no room for the guy. But to get a guy like Wade Davis, who has closed before, obviously closed things out for the Royals back in 15 when they won the whole thing. He's pitched for Joe Maddon before in Tampa. I guess the one question mark about Wade Davis is health. He didn't pitch that many games last year, but ended up setting his career high in saves. But the thing I do like is that he's a proven guy that you can turn to at the end of the game and give him the ball and feel confident that he's going to have his best stuff.
Yeah, the past few seasons, I mean, he's been as good as anybody really up and down baseball. You're right, he had a little bit of injury issues in the past, but we talked to him today, and he loves being with the Cubs. I mean, he truly is a man of a few words, doesn't say a whole lot, but he loves the fact that he's back with Joe. And actually, when he was with Maddon in Tampa Bay, that was when he was converted from a starter into a closer. And a lot of that had to do with Joe Maddon, and, Joe made him feel comfortable about it. So he talked about, and again, we've been harping on this all night here, the culture of the team. And he says when he found out he got traded, he was thrilled to find out it was the Cubs because from word of mouth via other players throughout the league and from word out of Cubs camp was that this is the place to be. There's a bunch of good dudes in the locker room. So Davis seems like he's going to fit right in. He's not going to. Don't anticipate 104-mile-per-hour fastballs like Aroldis Chapman was slinging out there. But Davis is good. He won 1.87 ERA at 27 saves last season, 17 the year before that. He's reliable. He's strong. He's definitely I don't think there's a major drop-off from Chapman to Davis. I really don't.
All right, we'll talk a little bit more about the bullpen. We're going to take a timeout here, come back and talk a little bit more with Kevin Powell, who's out in Mesa. I'm Andy Mazur here in Chicago. Spring training preview and a spring training overview of the Cubs' first couple of days of pitchers and catchers. First full squad workout is coming up tomorrow.
I mean, it's a good thing. When you're doing a lot of things like what I've been doing, it's all good stuff. So there's never going to be any complaint out of my mouth from what I've done. I mean, I've accomplished a lot so far, and I'm so thankful for it.
You know, when you play for that long and you don't have much of a layoff, it kind of feels like you never stopped playing, which is actually a good thing.
Chris Bryant, Jake Arrieta, mentioning the offseason went by pretty quickly. That's because they played into November. Andy Mazur here in Chicago. Kevin Powell joining us from Mesa, Arizona, covering the Cubs. And we'll talk a little White Sox here in this segment, too. There's a whole bunch of changes going on the south side as well as they try to, I wouldn't say mimic the Cubs' plan, but I think there's a kind of a blueprint out there now for proving that this it can be successful if you decide to go in one direction or the other. I'll tell you what, we were going to talk about the bullpen with the Cubs. I mean, there's some new additions. Koji Uehara came over from Boston, and a couple of other left-handers. Brian Dentzing has been now joined the team. Brett Anderson is the only real guy that I think has an outside chance to crack that rotation as a number five guy. He's coming off of major injury, which limited him big time last year with the Dodgers. But this is a pretty good pitcher that the Cubs kind of picked up on a dime.
Well, Brett Anderson, throughout his entire career, when healthy, is a very good pitcher and a good starting pitcher. So I think he sort of can maybe fill that void of Travis Wood, a guy that can come in and eat 3-4 innings if you need to, if one of your starters has a short outing. I've thought that was a phenomenal signing by bringing in Brett Anderson. And, Mike Montgomery, who's the likely fifth starter in this rotation, he says he's still looking at that as a competition between he and Brett Anderson. This isn't a sure thing Montgomery will be the fifth starter, although that's sort of the vibe you're getting. I think that's really what the Cubs want and envision for him. But I think there's certainly some competition there. But Brett Anderson, if healthy, he's going to have a lot of value to this team.
Yeah, he came in off of a back surgery with the Dodgers, limited him to only a handful of starts last year. But, again, a proven enough commodity where you take a flyer. Why not? And certainly
low-risk signing.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mentioned the White Sox, and I think there's a lot of White Sox fans that can agree with it's nice to have a direction. It's nice to see a plan trying to be executed. I mean, it doesn't mean it's going to be flawless and perfect, but at least it's a start.
It's a start, and I've talked to plenty of White Sox fans, and as crazy as this sounds, look, I don't think anybody's anticipating the White Sox to win a lot of games this year. They're likely going to have a losing season. White Sox fans are excited right now because there's a clear direction, and especially after the moves Rick Hahn made this offseason. I mean, I felt they, I shouldn't say won. I think the Eaton trade, they certainly won. The Sale trade, when you're giving up Chris Sale, I don't think you're ever really winning the trade. But considering what they got back, I thought it was pretty fair value that Rick Hahn did. You get two of the top prospects in all of baseball, one a positional player, one a pitcher. So that panned out pretty well for them. I think this is something that White Sox fans have sort of known deep down in their gut. They probably should have committed to this 5 years ago when the White Sox have been in the bottom third in Major League Baseball in farm systems for quite a while now. I think they were 26th ranked farm system last year. I think now they're second, just behind the Yankees in the that's from most rankings from, you know, baseball websites and things not. So they're near the top. There's excitement with Southside because they have a clear direction and people know where they're headed, or at least where they plan to head. There's no more baseball lingo right now for the White Sox, which was so frustrating for fans for the past, 7, 8 years now, where they've been trying to rebuild and keep a fresh farm system that hadn't really worked, and there's no depth. It was sort of a hollow organization. And then you bring in guys, and they're underperforming, and whether the pitchers are on and the hitters are off and back and forth. So I think right now White Sox fans are excited, despite the fact it's probably going to be a losing season. At least there is a clear direction and a clear path. And you mentioned what the Cubs have done. I think that was the final little nudge for the White Sox to finally commit to that. I really do. I mean, when you see that, and White Sox fans are just like, come on, man. Like, the Cubs did it. It's time we need to do this. It's enough of this baseball middle ground of mediocrity and having no direction. I think now they're on the right page. It's going to take a few years, and they're not done dealing. Andy, and we were talking off the air, Jose Quintana, I mean, that's another prize chip they can move. It's not often you can get a pitcher his caliber. This was similar to Chris Sale. With the kind of numbers they have, and especially the contract, the team-friendly deals they have, and I like the fact that Rick Hahn hasn't budged on a trade yet for Quintana. There's been plenty of rumors out there of offers that have been on the table, and Hahn didn't like it. You have to ask for a ton for Jose Quintana. He's a top 15, 20 pitcher in baseball, maybe higher. So you got to get the right amount of value for him. And then on top of that, you have a guy like Todd Frazier who's in a contract year. Maybe by the deadline, a team around the league is power-starved, and they're willing to overpay a little bit for Todd Frazier. I don't think Frazier would have as much value now, but when you come deadline, if a team says, hey, we need something to spark this offense, we need anybody, maybe with a little pop, Frazier can give you some homers. You can get some value there as well. So I don't think they're done. They have closer David Robertson who they could trade. No point in having a closer if you're planning on losing and rebuilding. And Robertson's another commodity they can move. So they're not done yet, which I think, you know, White Sox fans are interested to see. And maybe, who knows, maybe Jose Quintana, they end up not even trading. He's still young enough. He's still a guy you can sort of build around. But plenty of pieces for Rick Hahn to play with there and sort of float out there for other teams. And, Andy, I know the Cubs have said they never really wanted to make a deal with the Southsiders and Rick Hahn and the Sox
and
said the same thing. But, man, doesn't Jose Quintana just make a ton of sense for the Cubs?
It is
a young, controllable arm. That's what Jed Hoyer has repeated over and over the past couple of years. That's what they want, and that's what Quintana is.
Yeah, and a proven young arm that's under contract and controllable. It would just have to be the right kind of deal for both clubs, and obviously I would know that, you know, the White Sox would demand a couple of high prospects. You know, they probably want to, but you know, here's the thing. you know, when Cub fans were all up in arms about Gleyber Torres being traded as part of the Chapman deal, I'm saying to them, where's he going to play? You've got a 22-year-old shortstop who's hitting home runs in the World Series.
Well, this is that's the exact point of this of these rebuilds, and when you have depth to your organization, you can make moves like that. Would the Cubs have been able to make a move like that if they didn't have the amount of depth and talent that they do, right?
Same thing with Soler.
So that's part of it, and exactly. Now they have a closer to fulfill Chapman's empty spot. So when you have players and pieces to move around, what happens if one of these guys gets hurt? Oh, then you just bring them up from the farm system.
Exactly.
This is what you have to do as an organization to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, there's guys like Ian Happ who, you know, have proven that they can hit at the minor league level.
Mm-hmm.
What position? I mean, he plays second base. He plays the outfield a little bit, but, I mean,
and those are guys you can move for one of those controllable starting pitcher arms that the Cubs have been craving for the past couple of years.
Yes, and, you know, think about this. The Cubs franchise as a whole has been to the playoffs in back-to-back-to-back seasons only one time.
Wow.
So they're looking to do that again this year.
They're just getting started, folks. Yeah. There are talks of repeat and dynasty all throughout Cubs camp over the past week or so.
Health, health, and more health.
Yep.
That's obviously key. All right, Kev, hang on. We're going to take one final break here and wrap things up here as we get you updated on what's going on with Cubs spring training. A little White Sox talk there as well.